Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with Denver-based jazz guitarist Dave Devine. On behalf of the band, he talked about the new 2022 CD by the outfit known as Mountain Coast. It's called Phases. The music is all brought together by the brilliant modular synth and production of Michael Bailey. They are non-traditional jazz by any means, but it's the improvisation, harmony, and melody that come through loud and clear. Dave spent some quality time with the Brian Blade Fellowship and learned from the mighty Ron Miles. We get into this and so much more. Enjoy.
Well, hey, man, thanks for taking a minute out today to talk about the album and your life's music. I appreciate it.
Of course. No, it's my pleasure. We're excited that you were interested, and it's nice to talk about it. You know, it's nice for it to be finished and in the world for people to hear. Yeah, it just feels very good.
Well, and I guess under that context, you know, the last couple of years of the pandemic's been really difficult, and I see a lot of artists releasing albums now. So I'm curious how you did during the pandemic and how maybe it changed you and the band overall now that you have a new album out.
Yeah, it's interesting because obviously the playing and touring and being in person had completely stopped, but the idea of being able to still record and put yourself into situations where you were still sort of in the moment was what we were taking advantage of. My partner, Michael Bailey, and I, who both live here, have essentially just weekly sessions where we get together and just hit record. And we've been doing that for about 15 years. And he was originally a saxophonist and has migrated to just modular synths and recording. So it feels like our paths have just taken a strange place from sort of playing modern jazz and neo-soulish things, and now we're here. And so for us, it was just a matter of, if we couldn't be in the same room, we could at least be on the phone all the time and sort of sharing. We already had a process in place that we could sort of take advantage of. The other aspect of that is Kenny Warren, the trumpet player, is also from Denver, but has been living in New York City for the last 20 years. So we've played off and on so much that it was the same kind of feeling where you could still get you could improvise and you could share things and you could sort of do that through a strange sort of form of musical telephone in a way.
Which was the beauty of that whole time period.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like I teach at a university, so we were online and I was still feeling like that part of your brain was being activated and I was not a foe of technology. I mean, it's always better to be in the same room, but the fact that it was like, well, we're still going to get the same things done. We'll just be staring at a screen. You know, it felt like at least I had that to lean on. Yeah, the idea of trying to sort of foster that feeling of improvisation, which is like the one thing we missed, was like being in the room and being able to like have everything be related note to note. That's what we were all longing for sure.
Well, and it has to feel relieving to be able to have this out now with the chance of live music. It's kind of a Phoenix rebirth moment.
Exactly. And I put a recording out last year that I sat on the entire pandemic and didn't do anything with. And when everything had lifted, I was like, God, I didn't do anything. I should finish this recording. So it feels like it was a motivating factor in a lot of other ways in my life. But yeah, that you're right. We can sort of travel. It still seems to be tenuous, but we can certainly like gather locally and commune in that way.
So talk to me a little bit about how Mountain Coast came together. How did this union happen? And how long have you guys been together?
It's the culmination of, you know, 15-ish years of recording. Michael Bailey, who's sort of, you know, my musical partner now of all these years, he is really process-oriented. And it's sort of like a never-ending highway of we could just continuously do this. And I like to just put a head and tail on it and say, we have to put this out. This is it. We need to put these things into people's ears beyond this, and in a way sort of show progress too of our own development, you know. And so we started a recording about 5 years ago and had shared it. I think my wife had already worn it out before it had song titles and a full album name. And a couple of years ago, I decided to just put it out on, you know, via Bandcamp. I didn't tell him. I couldn't wait for him any longer. We decorated it. It looked great. I just put it out into the world. So then it sort of motivated him to think like, oh, this is, I'm interested in us doing this now. And so the idea with Kenny came about, again, just via the pandemic. Like, he's in New York City and he can send us tracks. And then it just began this long game of sharing a file and playing to it and sending back. And then just sort of those layers building over the course of those 2 years.
So let's go back to your beginnings from Indianapolis mm-hmm. and talk to me about how you got into jazz. Maybe your first jazz show you ever saw that kind of led you to where you're at now.
I think it was when I was in high school, I had a really close guitar buddy in the neighborhood. We would get together and play. We were all into rock and metal and all the things that were in vogue in the early 90s. And he went away to one of the Jamie Ebersold camps, and he came back with the incredible Jazz Guitar of West Montgomery record. And he bought two. He bought one for me and he bought one for himself, because he said all the teachers said, you should know this. And he thought I should know it too. And so I heard that, and it was one of those moments in your life where you're like, things are going to be different now. And obviously, if you're a guitarist in Indianapolis, you're always standing in the shadow of Wes. So that, I didn't understand what was going on in the music, only listening to like rock guitar or blues guitar or my dad's like kind of folk country guitar. I had no idea how he was doing this stuff on the instrument. So that just led me down this path of, I need to figure all of this out.
So talk to me a little bit about what exactly led you to Denver and what you're doing today. How did that road kind of expand out to you?
Well, the short version of the story is I came out here with a girl, which that didn't work out, but we both ended up staying because it's, as you were, we were just speaking of, it's a beautiful place to live. I like to be outside. And in the course of coming out here, I felt like in the first few months I met some really important musicians to me, and I felt like the things that I had been interested in were here, and the things I was interested in doing musically were like the present, you know, like sort of the whole history of the music was like a level playing field out here, where and I don't mean it in any slight at all to my hometown, which I'm very proud Hoosier. It just felt like the music was in a cul-de-sac that was, I didn't have peers that were interested in doing other things, you know? So showing up out here, I had two really important mentors in my life, the pianist Art Landy and the late great cornetist Ron Miles. And meeting those two just sort of shaped everything that was going to happen to me. I mean, really 21 years ago, like just moving here, there was chance encounters. And then after that, that just, the path was sort of right in front of me.
You know, I need to rephrase that question in the future, and it needs to be, what was the name of the girl that had you move?
I know.
It's always love, and, you know, it's just, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but, yeah.
It was the right decision. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you know, yeah, and it's life. You know, I will tell you, I remember when you said Ron Miles, I've interviewed him a few times. I remember exactly where I was at when I saw that come over my phone. I think I saw it on Twitter, and I was like, man, because I just talked to him. Like, last fall, this time last year, he had released his album, and he was talking about his dad, about how he was taking care of him, and he was so happy because things were kind of we were getting to that hopeful point, this pandemic. But what a cool cat, man. I remember the first time I interviewed him, I couldn't believe that a guy that produced music the way he did talked so low. He was very low. But extremely just like on that brilliant genius line. So that had to be a huge learning experience.
Yeah. He's one of the few people that speaks even quieter into a microphone. It's like his amplified voice. That was always sort of humorous about him. And also very interesting, I don't know if you knew this or not, but Ron was also from Indianapolis. He moved to Denver when he was 13. I mean, he moved with his family. You know, it wasn't like a decision that he himself made. But obviously, the fact that he and Bill Frisell's paths crossed so much because of a shared Denver history, you know, which Bill didn't know at the time.
So
to make it that even one level deeper. They went to the same high school. I mean, they had all of these things in common that they didn't know until they sort of spoke on the phone all those years ago. Yeah.
That's wild.
But,
crazy house.
Yeah, he was incredibly, the most important person to me outside of my immediate family. So it's like I never stopped feeling lucky every day that I had that in my life.
I'm curious, and I'm going to get into the band kind of overall,
sure.
But with you, everyone has a perception of you, your family, your friends, your fans, but ultimately you live your life. Who do you think you are?
I think I'm a teacher. I think most importantly, I feel like that's what my wife always says. You can't, she's like, yeah, you don't know how to turn the teacher off. I have two small children, so I feel like that's an everyday part of my life. Now we have a puppy that you can probably hear barking in the background. That's
which is awesome, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, she doesn't understand English. Never will. But
not yet.
Yeah, 4 months old. She's definitely a fireball. And I've been teaching. I taught alongside Ron for 20 years, and I feel like that is a huge aspect of what I do. I feel like I have an insatiable curiosity about all music and musical equipment and recording process. So I feel like the learning part, even if it is me teaching myself or being involved in that, I feel like that's how I would define it.
So let's say you come to Kansas City, the band comes to Kansas City, and you have to kind of pitch the essence of Mountain Coast and what your sound's going to be like to fill seats at one of our premier venues like the Black Dolphin or the Green Lady. How would you mm-hmm. orchestrate that to get people to come?
Oh, man, this is the toughest part. I just had to write all this promo, and you think you're really good at it. And you're like, musicians are the worst when they have to self-describe this. Like contemporary improvised music with trumpet, guitar, and modular synthesis. That's the simplest way. But that doesn't sound very, I don't know that I would go to that show. Maybe I would. I'd be curious.
I would. Yeah. I mean, I really would.
Ideas, I appreciate that. I feel like the idea is we always try to stress that the music you're hearing is improvised on the recording, because I think with the digital technology and things, everyone, they know that you could sort of patch things together or use Ableton. And I feel like discussing our process helps people relate to that. You know, like the only sounds on the entire recording are trumpet or guitar. So those low synthy sounds that you hear are actually trumpet that we like either a intentional thing or a happy accident where when you step back and listen, you think, well, now that's the bass line. Let's add more trumpet later. And so Kenny's reacting to the way that we are essentially like processing those sounds. So there you go. I feel like it's just that. It's contemporary improvised music on trumpet, guitar, and modular synthesis.
Well, hopefully you can get here to Kansas City, but before that happens, people can pick up your music. Where's the best place for them to pick up Phases and listen to it and find out anything about the band?
Well, we're very happy and lucky to be on Shifting Paradigm Records out of Minneapolis. And they have a website via Shifting Paradigm, a Bandcamp page. And they have a really nice Patreon set up to where there's like, you can sort of subscribe and get more bonus material and such. It's a musician-run family affair, Zach Harris and his wife. So it feels like a very, a really fortunate meeting of connecting sort of these separate entities. Like, I feel like that's probably the easiest. It's on all streaming platforms at this point, Apple Music for sure. But you want that physical copy. The artwork is absolutely beautiful. And it's a photograph by a very close friend of ours. And then the artwork was done by my wife. Very DIY. And so I feel like you want that CD. You want to look at that artwork while you're listening to it.
Beautiful. Hey, man, thank you for opening up about the band, Dave. I appreciate it. Good luck with it. And as the world opens up, I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Joe. It is really very an honor to be on here, especially considering you spoke to Ron and all of these things. It's really great to just, you know, again, have that daily reminder of him presence in our lives. even without him with us right now.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players in Denver, Kansas City, and spots all over the globe, giving fans all that jazz. Thanks to Dave for his time, music, and energy. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino in the iTunes Store. Visit NeonJazz at YouTube.com. And for everything Neon Jazz, all the time, go to TheNeonJazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.